Your daily dose of sports talk is here. Highlights, interviews, and analysis. From the entertainment capital of the world, Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
Yes, it does. And good to have you with us on this Friday edition of the show. We got a lot to do over the next 60 minutes. There was a wild football game that we'll get into in just a moment and touch on throughout the show. Thursday night NFL game. Tragedy in the world of NASCAR to talk about as well. The curious case of Brian Smith at Ohio University got a lot weirder with some revelations from the university side of the story on Thursday that we'll talk about. Page versus the Prince. Sam Yarnell is here. We'll have NFL picks from both he and I coming up a little later on in this show. But we do start things as we do each and every day, and that is with the big story. And the big story focuses on the NFL to start things off, because we had a game last night that if it wasn't the best game of the season, it certainly was one of the top two best games of the season. The Los Angeles Rams had a 30-14 lead early in the fourth quarter in Seattle against the Seahawks. They looked like they were on their way to stamping their way into sort of the conversation for the team to beat. All season long in the NFL, we've been looking for, who's that team to beat? Who's the team that has sort of risen above this crowd of sort of, some want to call it parody, I'll call it mediocrity in the NFL. Who's going to rise above it all? And it felt like the Rams were that team. They were my Super Bowl preseason pick. And then Rashid Shaheen has the punt return for a touchdown. And you're going, all right, it's just a punt return. Rams will get the ball back, get a lengthy sustained drive, get it back to a two-score game. Nope, punt. And then teams trade punts a little bit. And then the Seahawks are able to actually tie this game with a touchdown and one of the strangest two-point conversions you will ever see in an NFL game in order to get this game into overtime. And then in overtime, overcoming adversity, the Rams, they are the team to beat. Puka Nacua, lengthy touchdown pass from Matthew Stafford. And we're back on the Rams. We're back on feeling what we've thought all year. This is the team to beat. Look at them. They overcame everything. A bad penalty early in the game that cost them a touchdown. They're back in it. The weird two-point conversion. They're back in it. They're going to win this game. And then they allow the Seahawks to drive the field. And by the way, what's with not using the dynamic kickoff to their advantage all night? They were just kicking the ball through the back of the end zone all night. I don't understand that, but Seattle drives down the field, scores a touchdown. Do you know everything that had to go right for the Seahawks in order for them to win this game? Do you realize everything that had to go right? They had to convert three, not maybe if they convert. They had to complete three two-point conversions in this game in order to be able to win. That was the only way they could win. You want to talk about, you know, inside straight draw, inside royal flush draw, and you need the royal flush to win and pulling the card. That was the Ram. That was the Seahawks against the Rams on Thursday night. Everything that had to go right went right. And everything that had to go wrong for the Rams went wrong. And that's why I still think the Rams are the team to beat. After all of that last night, they went on the road, they blew a 16-point lead in the fourth quarter, and they still almost won the game in overtime. I still think the Rams are the team to beat. I still don't trust Sam Darnold. Did you see some of those throws last night? Did you see those two interceptions? And I know, look, when it counted last night, he made the plays that mattered. And the Seahawks now control the NFC West. An NFC West that is stacked with a few teams with double-digit wins that have had phenomenal seasons. What the 49ers have done, injury-riddled all season long, playing without Brock Purdy. Mac Jones was the starter for so much of the year. what the Niners have done is amazing. I don't buy them as Super Bowl contenders, but it's still amazing they're even in a position to be in the conversation. But I still keep coming back to the Rams. Give me that. Listen, more than any other sport, coach, quarterback, is there a more important combination? Belichick, Brady. You know, Shanahan, Elway. Go through the history of the sport. Tom Coughlin, Eli Manning. Remember, they have a couple of Super Bowls. Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes. Sean McVay, Matthew Stafford. They have a Super Bowl, don't forget. It still feels like the Rams to me. One more thing. Why is Puka Nacua doing everything in his power to sabotage his career? We've talked about it over a couple of days, the story of him and Aiden Ross and the touchdown dance that some would consider to be anti-Semitic. The comments he made about the officials saying the Jaguars were the most overrated team of the possible playoff teams. All of these different dumb things he said on this Tuesday live stream. With Aiden Ross. And yesterday he came out, and I venture to guess somebody in the organization, you know, a PR person wrote a nicely worded apology for the fact that he did this touchdown dance and made a gesture that some would consider anti-Semitic. And fine. If you want to say he was naive, he's young, okay. But he basically doubled down on his comments about officiating after the game last night, after this 38-37 loss. He basically doubled down on his comments. He had 12 catches for 225 and two touchdowns. That's what we should be talking about. Instead, what are we talking about? He put out a tweet after the game saying, "Can you say I was wrong? Appreciate you stripes for your contribution. LOL." This guy's got way too many years left in the league to play to sabotage what could be a Hall of Fame career one day. He is one of the best in the game. Put out in a big way last night with Davante Adams not on the field. And yet here we are talking about dumb tweets after the game. That's your big story. We're coming back. Thanks for being with us. We continue on this Friday edition of the show. We touched on it in the big story. What a game. That might have been the game of the year in the NFL. We've said that about a few games. I mean, week one, we had the Ravens and Bill. Come on, Sam. That's not the game of the year.
I mean, you just said it, Jason. It was the week one Ravens and Bills. And it's upsetting that the game of the year was week one. But it was week one.
Last night
was great. It was a lot
epic.
Of fun.
It goes to overtime.
About it.
Come on. The overtime where the Rams score first. Seattle comes down. The touchdown. The riverboat gambler. Let's go for two. We got to win the division. I mean, come on. And not to mention the fact they are arguably the two best teams in the league. I mean, after that game last night, that's kind of where I want to go and get your thoughts on this, Sam. Did we watch the two best teams in the league last night? Because for three quarters, Seattle sure as hell didn't look like it. And I'm sitting there texting with our friend Chuck Todd, the former Meet the Press moderator, because I had bet the Rams, full disclosure. I had bet the Rams on the money line last night, and I got a little extra bonus from our friends over at Stations Durango. So I'm like, hey, let's do it. Give me the Rams. And first of all, the officiating, I know you, usually it's your soapbox to jump on the officiating, but my God, I mean, they lost a touchdown first drive of the game, second drive of the game, whatever it was. They lose a touchdown because of a illegal man downfield that shouldn't have been. Then you got this crazy 2-point play in the end of the fourth quarter. I mean, this game had it all, Sam. It really, I mean, not to be the prisoner to the moment stuff, and I know you'll want to say Ravens-Bills, but if it wasn't game of the year, it was the second best game of the year.
It was definitely, when we look back on this season, it is one of those games. Like every season, we have games that we think about that kind of define a season, and it was unquestionably one of those games. I completely agree with you in that aspect, Jason. There are season-defining games every year. This was one of those games here in 2025. You know, I think it's interesting from a sports betting perspective. One of the things that a lot of us talked about in the community heading into this game was you had the Rams at like a plus 190 price to win the Super Bowl coming into this game. So now you're 24 hours ago Super Bowl favorites with a dollar and change associated to their name are the fifth seed in the playoffs. This is where all of this gets dangerous, and this is why a lot of people were putting in Super Bowl futures on the Seahawks and even the San Francisco 49ers before last night's game, because this game really opened up, Jason, the playoff picture in the NFC. The Seattle Seahawks are your current number one seed, but they haven't clinched the number one seed even after that monumental victory last night. They could still be run down by the San Francisco 49ers here in the final weeks of the season. So the NFC West has turned into, I mean, quite frankly, it's turned into the bloodbath that you and I thought it would be before the season started. This division is clearly the best in football, and it's the best division we've seen in a really long time.
I agree with that, but I'll also say this. I got to say this about the Niners. I mean, Kyle Shanahan has kept that thing together with duct tape and, you know, Velcro and twisty ties and all this stuff. Does anybody believe that Niners team is winning anything beyond a playoff spot? Come on, no.
Yes.
No!
Yes.
So you would put...
here's the thing.
And my God, then you better run to your nearest legal bookmaking institution and take the... They're 17-1 to win the Super Bowl.
And I think that that's not... If you're looking at Super Bowl bets right now, I think the Niners are certainly in like the top 3 to 5 for me of teams that I would pick right now, especially when you associate the value that you just mentioned. But Jason, look at this, right? If the season ended today, which I know it doesn't, and again, the Niners, like I just mentioned, could climb in the playoff standings quite a bit. But if the season ended today, the San Francisco 49ers would be going to Tampa Bay. Actually, no, they would be going to Philadelphia. But after this week, the assumption would be they'd be going to Tampa Bay for a first-round Super Wild Card Weekend playoff matchup. And I take the San as a Tampa Bay lover, as the Tampa Bay Bucks guy on the show, I would take the San Francisco 49ers. I'd probably lay upwards of 3.5 points with the Niners in that game.
It's going to be fascinating to watch now what happens with the Rams here over the final couple of games of the season. And boy, that is a monumental collapse for them last night. You're up 30-14, fourth quarter. You've got some of the 12 starting to leave the stadium, you know, in a huge divisional showdown. And then you get this punt return for a touchdown and everything goes to hell in a handbasket. From there, and that is an inexplicable loss. And they've had a couple of them now. I don't want to say a couple. I mean, you lose on the road at they lost on the road at Carolina, if I'm not mistaken. You know, that that was a bad weather game. You know, you can make some excuses there. This one is really tough for me to get around. For a team with that sort of coach, veteran quarterback combination, for that thing to fall apart the way it did. It's inexplicable to me, Sam. I'm without an explanation.
To your point, even more so, Jason, look at their three losses outside of the Carolina loss, right? You had last night to the Seahawks. You had overtime at home against the 49ers, and then on the road in Philadelphia against the Eagles. Now, none of these losses were big, but what it's telling you is when you're playing the best teams that your conference has to offer, it's starting to feel like the Rams are not capable of stepping up in the big moment when they need to, down a score at the end of this game. Not to say that they didn't last night because they didn't have a chance, but in these other games, and at times, even like when they had three punts in a row in the fourth quarter for LA, right? When they need to get that score, it just feels this year like this team might not have it all the way, that we can go down and we can flip that switch whenever we want in a game, and our team can finally, the tables can turn and we can start dominating them. It's starting to feel like the Rams don't have that gear that they can kick it into this year.
But we do have to sit here and say, do we really still trust Sam Darnold? Do we really? And this is the problem. And again, you talk about, you know, this game being sort of a microcosm for what the NFL season has been. And it really is, because I still come away from this game, I still feel like it's the Rams, and I picked them before the season started, so that might have a little bit to do with how I feel about it, Sam, but I still come away from this game saying, I honestly, at 30-14, I had basically written the start of this show today in my head for being able to come on here and say, we finally have that prohibitive favorite. We finally have that team that we feel like we can rally around as a handicapping community or as a sports talk community and say, this is the team to beat. And I come out of that game last night and I feel like everything I thought I knew has been blown to bits. It's where we are. Robert Littal is the founder of Black Sports Online. Yesterday on the show, we talked about this curious case of Ohio University head coach Brian Smith being fired. Wow, the story took a weirder turn yesterday than we were all expecting. We'll get to it next. Welcome back. If it's a Friday on Sports Wrap, it can only mean one thing. We are lucky to be graced by the presence, with the presence, of this man, Robert Littal, founder of Black Sports Online, hangs out with us every Friday on the show. He was with us yesterday, filling in for Sam, and he'll be with us for a good chunk of next week as well, with Sam being off, and I'm not going to be off. Other than Christmas, I am not off. I'm just working. That's what I do. We're going to be here for you. So yesterday on the show, we had this interesting conversation where we basically all we could do was speculate about what had happened to Brian Smith at Ohio University. By the way, not the Ohio State University that Robert Littal is wearing on his shirt, but Ohio University.
That's what Michigan fans wishes that was wearing that.
He was the head coach at Ohio University. They went 8-4 this year. And his first full season there. Mm-hmm. And everything was wonderful, apparently, until it wasn't, when he got fired for cause on, I believe it was Tuesday or Wednesday. And we were all scratching our heads going, all right, this is just kind of weird the way it's being explained. They were talking about unprofessional conduct. My initial thought went to, oh, maybe he got busted for gambling. Maybe he was involved, proxy betting, whatever. That there was some, because today, whenever something really goes wrong, your first thought is somebody's betting on sports that shouldn't be betting on sports.
And what was my first thought?
I know. And this is why I want to let you tell people, for those that aren't following the story, here is why Brian Smith got fired, according to Ohio University, from their football program as the head coach. Robert, tell us what happened.
Well, essentially, the president wrote a very strong note that said that Brian was having extramarital affairs. One of the extramarital affairs was with an undergraduate student that parents saw him going into the hotel on campus with the young ladies. Also, they said that he had an alcohol problem, that he was drinking in his office, that he came to an event also noticeably intoxicated. I don't know if you want to speak on what his lawyer had to say to refute that, but that's in general, you know, why they said that they fired him with cause.
Yeah, the attorney for him, Rex Elliott, responded in a letter to university president Lori Stewart Gonzalez. Multiple media outlets had it, stated Smith didn't participate in an extramarital affair, and you know it. He added that Smith and his wife separated earlier this year, were going through a divorce, and were living apart during the fall. Smith had been living at the OU Inn while looking for permanent housing and had told somebody that he saw athletes' families there while with a 41-year-old woman he was seeing at the time after he broke off the relationship with the Ohio student. And that was the other part of this. And I don't know if you mentioned this. It's not just that he was having an extramarital affair. It was with an Ohio student. It was with an Ohio University student. I mean, which is just, again, but if true, it's bonkers.
It doesn't seem like they're denying, the lawyer at least, denying any of this except the alcohol stuff. They definitely denied that. The relationship stuff, the way that I read it was, A, there's no policy against, you know, dating a student. Correct. As long as you don't have any power over them. They don't work with the athletic, you know,
it's
department.
It's still not smart, though.
I mean, yeah, I think, I mean, I don't know how old the undergraduate was, but let's just assume they're in their early 20s and he's in his mid to late 40s. It could definitely turn a side eye. He claims that the undergraduate approached him off campus. He did not know that they went to school there. They just met at a bar, just like regular people. And he just thought it was a regular younger woman that was, you know, hitting on him. And he didn't know until afterward that she went to Ohio University. And then he broke it off soon, you know, thereafter. I think he has a case. I'll be honest. I do. It's not the greatest optics. But when the lawyer says, look, there's multiple people on campus that have engaged in this type of activity. Your husband gave him, talking to the president, your husband gave him the bourbon that you're saying that he's drinking in the office. I think they definitely better than Sharon Moore. Definitely a better case to try to get his money back than Sharon Moore.
It's a weird thing, though. Why would you want to fire me? Went 8-4. I don't know. Maybe the expectations were higher.
Or is that just me? It sounds like there's something between the president and the coach. That because both letters seem personal. It didn't seem very professional. It seemed angry at each other. And I don't know why. I mean, I really couldn't tell you. But it doesn't look like he, even though it meant, like I said, bad optics, it doesn't look like he actually broke any university policy. At least that's what his lawyers say.
Bizarre. I want to get your thoughts and reaction to what we saw last night in Thursday Night Football, because the Rams figured out a way to blow a 30-14 lead in the fourth quarter of this game, Robert. And I was stunned. I had money. I won't lie. I had money on the Rams. Not a huge amount, but I took them on the money line, and watching them blow that lead was breathtaking, because this is the team I've had ticketed for the Super Bowl from before the season started to where we are now. Where do we go for a favorite to win a Super Bowl?
Yeah, I mean
we're in week 16. We're in week 16, and I still can't pluck a favorite.
I think that's great. I think it's amazing. I think I like the fact that we have absolutely no idea who's going to be in the Super Bowl, and we know it's not going to be the Chiefs. Yeah, you know, so we're almost guaranteed at least one team, you know, because you don't know about the Eagles, but at least one team from the AFC is going to be new. And that's great to me. And it's fresh and everything. I like when things are unpredictable. And you just don't like, okay, I know it's going to be the Cowboys and the 49ers and the Cowboys every year. They're going to, no, give me a little shock value. Give me a little Puka Nakuka, you know, tweeting after about the refs after going for 225. I like all this drama in the NFL right now. They've really stuck the parity, I guess, that they've been looking for.
Yeah, and I couldn't help but wonder watching that game last night. You mentioned the Puka Nakua thing, and I didn't get into this earlier in the show too much, but I can't help but wonder when you see some of those calls in that game last night. If those officials, those guys who are attorneys and lawyers who are sitting
the
there going...
The two-point one in specifically was...
Oh, my goodness. Well, but even the... I said this to Sam. That call on the illegal man downfield when they're at the one-yard line.
Yeah,
I mean, Terry McCauley's sitting there in the booth going, that cannot be a penalty.
It can't be a penalty. They're at the 1 yard line.
They're at the 1 yard line. You can't call that. Like, I'm watching that go, and every call after, I'm just sitting there going, are these officials just looking for a way to stick it to the Rams? And did Puka Nakua
doing his team?
I mean,
people are human. And you want to say something about me? I'm going to get back. And maybe, you know, I mean, I'm not saying they had a backroom meeting or anything, but it's. To me, it's definitely going to be in the back of their mind. And he doubled down on it. I just think it's something to watch, you know, going forward. Because, you know, like these were games that a couple of calls definitely made the difference.
It absolutely did. And just choking it away in the fourth quarter also made a difference. Robert Littal, Black Sports Online, hanging out with us for one more segment. Don't go anywhere. One more segment with the great Robert Littal, the founder of Black Sports Online, hangs out with us every Friday on the show. He will be with us next week, sitting in for Sam Yarnell. We'll chew the fat on all the top stories of the week in sports and all day. And every day but Christmas will be off. For affiliates watching, because all of our affiliates keep emailing me saying, what days are you working next week? Here, now I don't have to send an email to all 270 of you. I'm off on Christmas. That's it. See, that was easy. I don't have to go and send an email to all those affiliates now. JB Bickerstaff taking aim at the officials last night after the Pistons lose in Dallas against the Mavericks. Cooper Flagg had another great game. I think he had 24-10. He continues to play well and really finding his groove is the 18-year-old. But JB Bickerstaff claimed that one of the officials had, you know, some sort of bias he felt against him and the Pistons. And he ran through some examples and reasons why. But it just calls to mind to me, Robert, the fact that we're in a time right now where I don't think officiating from the WNBA, which we talked about all season long, to the NFL, where, you know, we had Puka Nacua saying what he said, and people just outright saying it, you know, whether it's, hey, maybe, you know, maybe an official had money on the game, or it's just officiating is bad in general. We've never seen officiating under fire the way it is right now.
Yeah, and, you know, being a ref is tough. Nobody likes the ref. I think the gambling situations have made people look cross-eyed at a lot of things. Like, why would you make that call? Mm-hmm. This doesn't make any sense. Also, the amount of times that they win the challenges is, in basketball at least, is a little disturbing to me. I think last time I checked, it's something like 75%. It's like, how are you missing, you know, so many obvious calls that they have to be challenged? And I think there's a lot of young referees that haven't gotten the respect, I would say, of the coaches and the players. And you saw it with LeBron the other night. You saw it with Ime Udoka the other night. Basically told two of the newer officials that they didn't even need to be in the league. I mean, they need to be fired, basically. It's part of sports, and I think you do it early, you know, so maybe when it's later in the season that person, you know, if he's doing a Pistons game, he doesn't want to feel that quote-unquote bias. It does seem like there's an uptick on complaints.
Yeah, I mean, and think about baseball. I mean, they're going to this, you know, the ABS, the challenge system, there. I mean, there's a lot of ways. And you know, the game that comes to mind for me, I think it was it was a Raiders game a few weeks back. It might have been Broncos Raiders, I don't remember, in Vegas, where a weird penalty was called. Delay of game was called on the visiting team because they held down the Raiders player. And then the Raiders wound up kicking a field goal with no time left. That meant nothing except the fact that it pushed the total over. Yeah. And you're looking at these things and you just can't help but wonder, in this era of unbridled sports betting, and now you've got Kalshi and Polymarket jumping in with prediction markets. I mean, there is so much money being poured into sports betting and prediction markets. You got this thing with the transfer portal now that, you know, Kalshi's actually going to put up prediction markets on players going into the transfer portal.
And listen,
it's the Wild West, man.
Look, we know the mob is still out there.
Yeah.
You know, the Italian mob, the Serbian mob, I thought, you know, when John Gotti went to jail, that was pretty much it. But you find out that there's still somebody coming in there with a jacket and a suit saying, hey, man, I got an offer you cannot refuse. And I literally mean cannot refuse. So you wonder how many people are being affected by this. I think to get caught, you have to be dumb on a very high level. But it's not hard to miss a couple of threes to push a game over or under. It's not as, you know, it's not as difficult as people think.
No, and it's not easy. And it's not as difficult if you only do it once or twice. If there's a pattern of it, then it can become a problem. If you only do it once or twice, I've always said the bank robber doesn't get caught the first time he robs the bank. He gets caught the second and third time he tries to rob a bank or rob the same bank. One last thing before we go. I saw this stat. There's a stat for everything these days. Nikola Jokic breaks the record for career assists by a center. Can we all agree on something? Nikola Jokic isn't a center. There are no real centers in the NBA anymore because all of them play outside the three-point line anyway. I mean, in the case of Jokic, sometimes he's the guy handling the ball at the top of the key, Robert. I mean, I just have a hard time classifying guys anymore. Okay.
If Jokic, like you said, if Jokic was just, you know, taking jumpers and like three, like a lot of these big guys, you know, do. But he's down there in that post. You know, he's got them post moves and he's leading the league in rebounds. You know, things that centers, you know, normally do. He's unique Let's put it like that. He is a unicorn where I can hear what you say. He's half the time he's the point guard, right?
Yeah.
You know, half the time, you know, he's like point a, center. I guess, a stretch four or whatever. He's like Kevin Durant, you know, out there. And then other times he looks like Hakeem Olajuwon. And you know, I think that's the future of that position. And, you know, maybe we call it something different, you know, in the future. But, you know, big guys getting, you know, 10 assists a game is not, that's very unusual. He's basically Russell Westbrook at almost 7 feet tall, but he can shoot like, you know, Kevin Durant and Steph, but then he got the post moves like Akeem and Kevin McHale. I guess that's why he's Jokic, I guess. You know, you see Sangoon, who's like Shingun, a little baby, yeah. Jokic. But he, that's why he's baby Jokic. Nobody can quite do what Jokic got. And listen, they're playing very well with a lot of guys that are out.
It was interesting you mentioned the Sengun Jokic thing, because they went toe-to-toe the other night. Mm-hmm. Last weekend, I watched the game. I think it was on Sunday night. And it did look like baby Jokic. There is a lot of Sengun. Yeah, Sengun's got a lot of that Jokic in him. We got to go. Robert Littal, we'll see you next week. Looking forward to it, my man. Have a great weekend.
All right, almost Christmas times.
Almost.
Jingle bells, all that great stuff.
You are the gift that keeps on giving. We're coming back. Welcome back to the show. We'll wrap it up with Paige versus the Prince, a 4-pack of NFL picks from myself and Sam Yarnell. That's coming up. Tragedy struck the world of NASCAR, and it feels like a refrain that we've sung too many times, Jerry Bonkowski. And Jerry Bonkowski is hanging out with us on the show. Long time friend and somebody that I have spoken to about NASCAR over a zillion times over the years. Senior NASCAR motorsports columnist, contributor, EssentiallySports.com. This is amazing that it feels like deja vu all over again. You know, the NASCAR community mourning the loss of one of its own through a plane crash. This time it's Greg Biffle and his family dying in a horrific crash on Thursday, Jerry. And I immediately reached out to you, and you knew Greg Biffle. I mean, you covered him extensively over the course of your career.
Correct. I mean, Greg was just an absolutely great guy. I mean, if I had to, and I don't like to do or play favorites, but if I had to pick my three favorite people in the sport, Greg would be one of those people. I mean, he was just very open. He was really the kind of guy that he kind of was a cross between old school racing, very similar to like a Mark Martin type of guy. And, you know, it was definitely a fan favorite. He, you know, media, he was always available to the media. He was always very open to me. I'm very humbled to have known him, and I'm still devastated. I'm going to be devastated for the rest of my life that he's gone from us. He was an excellent pilot, Jason. He had over, I think, 4,000 or 5,000 hours in both planes and helicopters. He knew what he was doing. Obviously, something happened mechanically, and we won't know for a long time, but it's just a great loss and great tragedy to the sport and to my friend as well.
And his family. And before we talk about his career, as I mentioned, this is something that's been prevalent within the NASCAR world. This isn't the first time that NASCAR has either lost somebody or come close. Dale Earnhardt Jr. Had a crash. I mean, this has happened quite a bit.
Well, Alan Kowicki in 1993, less than 6 months after he won the Winston Cup Championship, he dies in a plane crash right outside of Bristol. And I've had so many friends, you know, both in the industry as well as other sports have passed away because of plane crashes. But the thing, like I said, the weather was marginal, but it wasn't to the point where they would close the airport or anything. But apparently, and I just saw a thing on, I think it was Instagram here a little earlier, that his wife apparently texted or called or did something to her mother saying that we're in trouble. That was the exact words. We're in trouble. Wow. And that was it, you know, and it's really sad. It really is sad.
Talk about his career. You know, for people that may not, you know, have been as plugged in, you know, whether it was racing trucks, cars, I mean, he was great at all of them.
He was. And the thing is, he not only was he historic in the sense that he also won both a truck championship and an Xfinity championship, he came 35 points in 2005 from beating Tony Stewart for the championship. He would have been the first guy ever to win all three major NASCAR championships. And, you know, that's something that he always regretted it, but he understood that was the nature of the beast in competition. He had, 19 cup wins. I think it was 20 Xfinity wins and 17 truck wins. So 56 total wins. And my column in essentially sports.com is going to be up a little bit later. And one of the things I say, and I'm surprised nobody else has said this, and I'm not patting myself on the back or anything. The best way I think that NASCAR can honor Greg Biffle, really simple. Next month is the 2026 NASCAR Hall of Fame induction. Let's make a posthumous induction for him. That's what I believe. I mean, you know, he came close this year. He was eligible this year, came close to being inducted, but didn't have enough votes. That's what NASCAR should do. They should definitely induct him this year, you know, because he deserved it.
Does it work in such a way where you can be on the ballot, I guess, for multiple years? And
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I wasn't sure of, because I also noted that he wasn't in the Hall of Fame, but he's considered one of the 75 best drivers of all time.
Correct. And, you know, to see a guy not in the Hall of Fame already, but like I said, this was his first year of eligibility. I am very confident that had he not, even with the tragedy, he would have been in next year or the year after, you know, 2027 or 2028 classes. And so it was just it was inevitable that he would be inducted into the Hall of Fame.
It was what he did after his career that also, you know, got a lot of people's attention, whether it was, you know, helping people in Western North Carolina after the hurricane. I mean, he was a real humanitarian, wasn't he?
He really was. And, you know, I mean, he loved people. He loved animals, especially dogs. He and I have had so many conversations about his dogs and my dogs. I have three dogs myself. You know, he was the kind of guy you just wanted to hang around with, have a beer with, just, you know, shoot the bull. And he was so funny. But one of the things that I really didn't see too much of it in some of the other stories that my competitors, wrote yesterday, is that he was so intelligent. I mean, the guy was a whiz. I mean, he was so intelligent. I mean, you can't be, a philanthropist, a major champion. You have several major businesses. You have all these pilots and pilot licenses in it. If you're not a smart guy, you know, you're not going to do that. He just was, he amazed me with some of the intelligence that he had. He really was just a great guy to be around. And I haven't seen him I talked to him earlier this year. But one other thing I was going to mention is there was a animal shelter that was in dire need of a lot of money to raise. And so he raised not only his own out of his own pocket. I know it was a six-figure amount that he gave to this shelter. Plus, he also spearheaded a fundraising campaign, and he wound up getting them like $3 million. They wanted to honor him by naming the shelter after him. And he said, no, I don't want that. You know, he never wanted to be he didn't want to take credit for things that he did. He did them out of the joy of his own heart, you know, that kind of thing.
Jerry Bonkowski, longtime follower of NASCAR, senior NASCAR motorsports columnist and contributor, EssentiallySports.com. And again, he'll have a column up there that you can check out as well, talking about the life and the passing of Greg Biffle. It's good to see you, my friend. Let's do it again soon, all right?
Most definitely.
And hopefully on a better note. We're coming back. More Sports Wrap. Don't go anywhere. Just about time to put the wraps on this baby for a Friday, but before we do, a couple of reminders. If you have not done so yet, make sure to subscribe to the Sports Wrap with Jason Page podcast, available on all your favorite podcasting platforms. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube Podcasts, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Odyssey, Amazon. I don't know why I'm doing this while I do that, but make sure to go and check it out. 45 minutes, there for you every early afternoon, the audio version of the show. We also have Sports Wrap with Jason Page, the YouTube channel. If you have not checked this out yet, I highly encourage you to do so. We have the Monday through Friday version of the TV show, commercial free, there early every afternoon. It's the place to watch it if you're not watching it on television. It's fantastic. We also have Sports Wrap shorts there. These are 1 to 3 minute long videos, verticals, as the kids would say, where we get into all the top stories. We break the news when it comes on. We also have the top games covered every night. So the biggest stories during the day, the biggest games every night. And on Sundays in the NFL, we are all over it. with everything that's happening and breaking down the games as they happen. So that's Sports Wrap Shorts, available on our YouTube, Sports Wrap with Jason Page YouTube channel. They're also available on our TikTok, Sports Wrap Jason Page. Also on our Instagram, Sports Wrap Jason Page. Easy to remember. Also, don't forget, Sports Wrap weekends on many of these same affiliates. If not, check your local listing for time and schedule. It could be on a sister station or a different station in the market. But Sports Wrap with Jason Page weekends, we have a great show lined up for this weekend. Diana Russini, Stan Van Gundy, Diana Russini of The Athletic, who does a great job on the NFL, Stan Van Gundy, former NBA head coach, and Jerry Bonkowski, who you saw on today's show, breaking down what happened with Greg Biffle and talking about his life and his career and remembering him. So without any further delay on this Friday edition of the show, there's only one thing left to do. Cue up the band.
It's Friday, and that means it's time for the weekly face-off for sports betting bragging rights. It's Paige versus the Prince on the Sports Wrap.
Thank you, Chad Erickson. Sam Yarnell. Four winners from you, please.
I think the trumpet player in the band blew out my ear when he was playing that intro.
I'm going to eat some yogurt. Goodness. I'm going to do some yogurt while you're giving your picks today. Blueberry.
All right,
Jason, blueberry.
Let's start All right, well, blueberries and Jerry World. Here, yeah, there was a rhyme there. We'll start with blueberry and Jerry, right?
I like it.
Down in Jerry World, the Los Angeles Chargers visiting the Dallas Cowboys. I'm going over in this game. 49.5 feels light to me. We got an indoor game, two indoor teams, not a lot of great defense on either side. I like points in this matchup. I think Dallas tries to keep up with LA throughout the entire game. Over 49.5 in Chargers Cowboys. Next, the Kansas City Chiefs lost their starting quarterback last week. In case you missed it, Patrick Mahomes tore his ACL. Gardner Minshew will start for this team this week. So obviously we're going to pick against them, right? Obviously we're going to pick against the Kansas City Chiefs. So I've been talking about how bad they are all season long against the Tennessee Titans, right? Wrong. We're laying it. Kansas City, -3. Tennessee's one of the worst teams in the NFL. I'll take the Chiefs minus a field goal. Next, Jaguars and Broncos. Trevor Lawrence travels to Denver this weekend, and I don't think he'll score a touchdown. Under 46.5 in Jaguars Broncos. This is one of those games that either ends 17-10 or 40-39. It's just either one, and I'm going to go with the former rather than the latter. So under 46.5 in Jags Broncos. A lot of big spreads out there this week. I'm going to go with the Texans against the Raiders, kind of the same cap as the Tennessee cap. Raiders are a horrible football team right now. Texans need to win games to make the playoffs. I'll lay more than two touchdowns with Houston against Las Vegas this weekend. Chargers, Cowboys over 49.5. Lay the field goal with the Chiefs against the Titans. Jaguars, Broncos under 46.5. And Texans minus 14.5 against the worst in the NFL, the Las Vegas Raiders, Jason.
The Texans and Raiders might be the one where I'm not on the same page with you. I didn't touch it, but I could see like 24-10 there, 21-7. The hook scares me when you're talking about a number that big. All right, I got four for you. We actually agree on one, so let me get that one out of the way. Jaguars, Broncos, under 46.5. I don't even see the scenario where it's like 30-29 or 40-39 or whatever the hell you said. I don't even see that as a possibility. Jaguars, Broncos, I love the under. It feels like a missed number. Game number two for me. Let's go Chargers and Cowboys. I'll take the Chargers plus the 2.5. Look, the Cowboys are done. Chargers need it. It's travel, but it's not the brutal west to east coast travel. I'll take the flying Harbaughs and Herberts. Give me the Chargers plus 2.5. Under 43.5 in the Giants and Vikings. This feels like a lock if I've ever seen one. I can't see these two teams combining for 43.5. I'd be surprised if they combined for 35.5. I'll take the under 43.5 in that game. Give me the Steelers plus 6.5. Wait a second. Did I have that right? Now I got to go back and look at my picks. I think I might have screwed it up. I had the Steelers. Let me see. Yeah, I do. Steelers plus 6.5 in Detroit against the Lions. Because why? The Steelers do nothing but play close games, Sam Yarnell. So I'll take the Chargers plus 2.5, under 43.5 in Giants-Vikings, under 46.5 between the Jaguars and Broncos in Denver, and the Steelers plus 6.5 on the road in Detroit. Page versus the Prince. It's going to do it for us. Thanks to Robert Littal and Jerry Bonkowski. Thanks to you, Sam Yarnell. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you all back here on Monday for a new edition of Sports Wrap, or this weekend for Sports Wrap Weekends. Bye-bye.